Blog Talk Radio.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
You from?
Straight out of Compton, a brother with his finger on the trigger. But once I take out, my rep gets bigger. I'm the roof is spilling, and you know this. But the suckers in the public won't show this. But I don't really care, I'ma make my snap. If not from the records, from jacking a crash, it's like burglary. The definition is jacking. But when illegally armed, it's gonna pack it. Like a fool out in the set. About somebody talking trash and put them in check. So if you had a show in the front row, I'ma call you a sucker if you don't go with the flow. Probably get mad like a punk is supposed to. But that shows me, yo, you're composed to a crazy long brother from the street. Attitude legit, cause I'm ready to hit. If your rear controls are automatic, for any fool in my way, it starts static. Not a right hand, cause I'm a hand itself. Every time I pull an AK off the shelf, the security is maximum, and that's the law. R.E.N. spells RIM, but I'm raw. See, cause people know me as a villain. The definition is clear, you're the witness of a killing. It's taking place without a clue. And once you're on the scope, you know you're through. Look, you might take it as a trip, but a brother like Brand is on a gangster tip straight out of Compton. Compton, Compton, Compton.
His name and the voice coming.
Straight out of Compton, it's a brother that don't love your mother. It makes a sister think I love her. Dangerous young brother raising hell. And if I ever get caught, I make bail. See, I don't really care. That's the problem. When I see a police, I don't dodge them. But I'm smart, lay low, freezing wild. And when I see a punk pass, I smile. To me, it's kind of funny. The attitude showing suckers driving. But don't know where the hell they going, just rolling. Looking for the one they call easy. But here's the flag. Never seen like a shadow in the dark, except when I'm low. You see a truck and truck over a hesitation. And here's a street with the one who doesn't land penetration. Feel a little gust to win, and no upset. And leave a memory no one will be forgetting. So what about the girl who got shot? I don't think I give a damn about a girl, I ain't a sucker. This is an autobiography of the East. And if you ever mess with me, you get taken by a super dope brother who is brother. Word to the mother, yeah, straight out of Compton.
Compton, Compton, Compton. The way it goes in the city of Compton, boy.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. Coming to you live from the capital city of North Kekilaki. It is 8 o'clock on the East Coast. It is the last day of July, the last Tuesday of July. And I'm looking out the window right now. It's like we got another thunderstorm rolling in. It seems like every other Tuesday we've got some kind of funky weather coming around. So we've got another thunderstorm coming in. So we're going to get the show in. We'll see how far it goes. Hopefully the lights won't go off. I had to do the same thing a couple of weeks ago. Seems like on Tuesdays, for some reason, we get rain and thunderstorms and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see how it goes. Hopefully we won't have any issues, but we'll see how it is. Tonight's topic, this is part three of a four-part series I'm doing on police departments, the corruption and the controversy of four of the biggest police departments in the country. As you remember, the first one we did was on Baltimore, and then the second one was on Chicago. Tonight we're going to be talking about the LAPD, and next week the last chapter will be about the NYPD. And we're going to talk about various things with the LAPD that you may or may not have known. And I think it's important to talk about corruption in the police department because there are millions of people of color who has issues with the police department. And lots of these issues are legit. Because, you know, because this goes both ways. You know, a lot of people, you know, some seem to think that the cops can do no wrong and they just, you know, agree with them anytime anyone gets shot or whatever. But there is, but cops are just like everybody else. They're people too. They are corruptible and the whole nine. So we're going to be talking about that tonight. Matter of fact, with the LA police, with the topics we're going to talk about tonight with the LA Police Department, we're going to talk about a former cop named Frank Liger. He ended up killing an undercover cop. Come to find out, this guy was racist. He didn't like black cops, even though he was a cop himself, if you can believe that. And then we're going to be talking about the controversy with the Crash Rampart division that they had in the police department. We're also going to play the excuse me one second. Excuse me, I had to sneeze there. Okay. And we're also going to talk about probably the most famous controversy that the LAPD had, and that was with Rodney King. And as a matter of fact, we're going to play that whole. I'm going to play the whole how that went down, and it's an actual news report on that. And then the last one that you may not have known or may have forgotten about was an ex-cop. His name was Chris Dorner. He killed cops. He was an ex-cop himself, and he killed police officers. So we're going to hear a story about that. So, I mean, we're going to be loaded tonight with the LAPD. Call in number 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. We want to get in on that. Hopefully I can go until about 9:30, 10 o'clock, depending on what the weather is going to be like. Before the show came on air, I was looking at the local weather, and we've got some strong storms moving in the area, so you may or may not hear thunder in the background. But it is raining right now, so we're gonna go ahead and kick the show off. Hopefully we won't have any issues. So I think the last time we had, I think it was on Baltimore, we did about 9:30. I didn't want to take the chance of lights going out and show getting cut short. So we'll see how far we go tonight. Hopefully we can get everything in. 563-999-3682 if you want to join. And if you live in L.A. or if you had any experience with the LAPD, or if you're a cop or if you know a cop or whatever, if you want to call in, please feel free to do so. So the first thing we're going to do, give you some background on what we're going to talk about first of all. Oh, let me just say this. There was another incident with cops shooting someone in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Oh, excuse me. I don't have all the details just yet, so I can't comment on that particular case. But I did see the video, and to me it looked like the guy had a gun. I'm not sure all the facts, and I want to get the facts in before I make a comment about that. But from what I saw, looks like he had a gun. Cop shot and killed him, and the family is upset. Some of the citizens are upset. So we'll see how this goes. Like I said, once I get more information, I'll be able to have a comment about that. But I'm not going to make a comment before I know the deal. So we'll see how that goes. Once I get more information, I may talk about that next week along with NYPD. We're going to do NYPD next week. That'll be the last chapter of this series. So we'll see how that goes. 563-999-3682. But the first topics we're going to talk about tonight, first couple of clips that we're going to talk about tonight are talking about a former cop named Frank Liga. And this guy's particular story, and I didn't know about this guy until I started doing the research, but this guy was a racist cop. He didn't like working with black police officers, and you'll hear the story about he killed a black police officer. Now, the problem with this story is, this guy was a police officer. His job was to serve and protect citizens in Los Angeles. You cannot be a racist and be a cop, but we already know that there are racist police officers, and that's a problem. Because this guy could kill one of his own, brothers in blue, he could kill anybody. And it's just crazy once you hear the story about this guy. And the problem with this was that the other officers knew that he was a racist, and he was still a cop anyway. So this is, once you hear this story, this is crazy. So the first two clips are going to be talking about this guy, Frank Liga. I think that's how you spell his, I think that's how you say his last name. It's Lyga. If you want to look him up and get some information about him. But this guy, racist cop, killed one of his own brothers in blue. I mean, it's just, the story is crazy. Straight up crazy. So let's play this little short clip and then we'll be right back.
Welcome to the Advice Show, media with a common sense approach. So a LAPD detective was relieved of duty because some recording came out about him being happy about killing a black officer that was undercover some years back, and he stated that he wished he could have killed more. Let me go ahead and roll the clip.
A developing story now. LAPD detective Frank Liga has been relieved of duty today.
Liga shot and killed off-duty officer Kevin Gaines in 1997. Now, last week, the department announced it was investigating Liga after a recording was released where he said he had no regrets over the death and wished he could have killed more. The LAPD says Liga was relieved of duty based on new information that came to the attention of the chief, but they wouldn't go into specifics, saying it was a personnel issue.
Now, LAPD has always had a history of racist police officers. That's nothing new. You remember the beating of Rodney King. Those Neanderthal savage police beat down Rodney King, and it was so bad they went to trial, and nothing happened to them. The black people back in that time period got pissed off, and they started rioting for days. And it was pretty bad, some of the things that was going on. But what sparked that? Police brutality. See, there's a lot of racist cops running around here. That's not no secret. And the thing is, what kind of job can a racist do to inflict harm, kill, maim, trump up charges, and all this other stuff they would like to do to black people and not be charged with a hate crime? Police officer. They can be cops all day long, these racists. I've had people who are black police officers tell me stories about racists in the police department, putting Klan pamphlets and all this other stuff by their lockers and stuff like this. This goes on here in America. You don't be hearing, show me the stories of black police officers killing white police officers. You show me stories of black police officers, a bunch of stories of black police officers beating down white men like that, of black police officers trumping up charges on a bunch of white men. You don't see that stuff. But it's always the other way around. Then we the problem. I'm the problem for talking about something that's in the news. I'm not doing news like The Onion where they're doing this satire, fake type of stuff for entertainment purposes. I'm just telling you what's being reported and just putting a commentary to it. But I'm the problem. No, you the problem. You the main problem. Because you want to keep racism going. You like to be in a position where, you know, you feel like you some sort of superiority to somebody else. And when the moment you hear the truth that you're not superior to nobody and that this racism stuff gonna have to come to an end. You know what, people like that who got a problem with when I make these kind of videos, guess what? In about 2050, probably gonna look more people like myself or, you know, other people of color. I just wanna let you know that, those of you who hate people so much. I mean, so, you know, those of you that just, like, stuck on that, you better give it the time. It's the only thing I'm going to tell you. It is what it is. But, I mean, you know, this thing is like when black people say stuff about the cops and why black people don't trust police and all this other stuff, stories like this is exactly why. I mean, because, like I say, you just don't hear about the black officers doing this stuff to people. You just don't. Or other, you know, other cops as minority groups, you know, Hispanic cops or Asian cops or, you know, Native American, you know, maybe they have a few Arab cops. You just don't hear that sort of thing. You just don't. Not as something as the norm. So don't tell me it's not a race problem in this country, because it really is. Hit me up in the comments if you have the commentaries. Subscribe.
Okay, so that's the first clip giving you a little background about this guy, Frank Lyga, L-Y-G-A, who was accused of being a racist cop, which shouldn't surprise nobody, because, you know, quite sure that most cops, now I can say most, but a lot of cops are racist cops. And you have to remember, the modern day police force came from the plantation police, from way back when, which was pretty much a white militia, made up of white guys with guns that went out and captured black people that had escaped from the plantations. Sometimes they were caught and taken back to the plantation. Sometimes they were caught and taken to other plantations. Sometimes they were caught and they were killed. So today's modern police force has its roots in yesterday's plantation police. And it is what it is. And that's why, you know, people seem to wonder why black folk got issues with cops, is because of stuff like this. If this guy is a racist and he don't like black cops and he's a cop himself, what the hell you think he about everybody else? He wouldn't give a damn about nobody else. And he probably didn't give a damn about nobody else, but he was still a cop. This next clip, this is an interview with a former LAPD officer, and he pretty much backs that story up, that everybody that was a cop with this guy knew that he was a racist cop. He was a racist cop, and they knew it. He killed one of his own brothers and pretty much got away with it. So we're going to listen to this clip and be right back.
My name is Brian S. Bentley. I'm a former Los Angeles police officer. I was a police officer for 10 years, and I spent 8.5 years working at Southwest Division. I did my rookie year at West Los Angeles Division. Currently, I'm a writer, journalist, and an LAPD critic. I was there when the O.J. Simpson, during the O.J. Simpson trial. I was there when my ex-partner, Kevin Gaines, was killed. And I was also part of an extensive investigation. And it was just a horrible time. People aren't interested in hearing about officers' rights being violated when officers violate other people's rights.
Now, you mentioned Kevin Gaines a moment ago. Can you tell us what you know about Kevin Gaines, what type of cop he was, and him, more about him, the person?
Well, he was a nice person, very nice person, friendly, would help anybody that needed help. The thing that the media failed to mention and talk about is that Kevin Gaines' mother was killed by the LAPD. She had a seizure, diabetic seizure. The police department responded, and they thought that she was on drugs, and they handcuffed her and didn't give her medical attention in a timely manner, and she passed away. And there was a lawsuit against the LAPD in which he and his family won. So Kevin Gaines had money before, all the time they talk about he lived above his means. They never mentioned that fact in that lawsuit. Kevin Gaines was just like many of the other officers on the job who didn't conform to the quote-unquote LAPD, the blue. He was harassed, and he may have received some suspension days for minor things that others wouldn't have received. And so, like many other officers, he was angry about that, just as I was. And as a result, he was labeled as a hothead, when basically he was just an average police officer. Now, he worked briefly for Suge Knight, just as approximately 100 other officers. Officers were paid $75 an hour to work for Suge Knight. I was asked to work for Suge Knight, which I declined. But a lot of officers did, and they weren't all black officers, and they weren't all from LAPD. So that's one myth. Another thing is that yes, he did. He was living with Suge Knight's estranged wife, okay? And that's another reason, too, where they say he may have been living above his means, okay? He's living with the wife of a millionaire. Of course, he's going to have a little extra more things.
100 million.
exactly. So the LAPD, and one thing that's interesting about LAPD, not to get off the subject, is whenever there's a complaint made, LAPD's first priority is to find something to discredit the person who is making the complaint, such as if you go in and make a complaint on an officer, the first thing they'll do is run your record, see if you have any warrants, see if you were arrested, see if you got any tickets, and the first line on that complaint form will be, Alex is in here making this complaint because he has a warrant, and that's why he's angry against the police department. Well, the police department does the same thing when they investigate other officers. And then in this case, when they wanted to clear Detective Liga, they went after Kevin Gaines' character to assassinate his character first. When you say Kevin Gaines, people automatically think of Rampart, and it's because of what LAPD did to tarnish his name to clear Detective Liga. From my understanding, he did not have a role in any of the Rampart. He never worked Rampart, as all those other officers did. And as I mentioned before, he worked for death row, just like a lot of other officers did. There's no connection with him in the Rampart scandal, absolutely none. He wasn't arrested for drugs. He wasn't partners with any of those guys. And most of what those guys did was on duty in Rampart. They took drugs from drug dealers and allegedly killed people while they were working in Rampart as partners. when I was a rookie, I did my rookie season, what they call probationer, at West LA Division, and Detective Ligon was a training officer. Everybody knew who he was, particularly the black officers, because we were told to watch out for him, that he couldn't be trusted and that he didn't like blacks. I tried to speak to him several times. He never even looked at me. He just continued on his way, and I've never had a conversation with him to the point where I never even looked at him, but his reputation was known throughout the division.
Now, this was back in 89?
This would have been in 90, between 90 and 91, because I was out of the academy, so that it would have been that time. Well, I was told back then in 1990, 1989, there was no secret. It wasn't a bad thing to be a racist if you were in the LAPD. My first training officer told me, my orientation was, my training officer was very nice, very polite. He just told me straightforward, I don't like blacks and I don't like minorities. I don't think that you belong in this job. The only reason you're on this job is because of affirmative action. And my job is not to train you, it's to get rid of you. That was my orientation. Told to me straight up. I went back to West LA Division in somewhere around 97, when this shooting occurred, when Detective Liga shot Kevin Gaines. I walked into the station, into the front area, and Detective Liga was there. This was shortly after the shooting. Another officer said, ask him, he was surprised that he was out in the field so recently after the shooting. And he told him that he was cleared right away, that there was never an investigation, that the investigating detective told him that he would clear him and do whatever he could to clear his name, and he was never taken out of the field. That sent an alert, and I've been on this ever since. And I said I would never give up after hearing that. So when I heard this audio, I wasn't really surprised. I wasn't surprised at the content, because I know that's his character. It sounded just like him. The arrogance, the cockiness, the boldness, that was Detective Liga all the way. So I wasn't surprised by the content. It was it was disturbing that he made it in front of approximately 38 people who were potentially 38 witnesses, and he felt comfortable enough that these people wouldn't tell on him and that what he was doing was okay. That was disturbing. Also, too, he put these officers' careers in jeopardy because it's against department policy not to report misconduct. So every officer who heard this, who didn't notify internal affairs, should be suspended based on the rules and regulations of LAPD. They all should get at least 3 days for this, for not reporting it. Well, what's interesting about it is all these years, the LAPD and Frank Liga has been saying it was road rage, that Kevin Gaines was chasing after him, and they came to an intersection and Kevin Gaines was yelling at him, and it was a case of road rage where he pulled out his gun. When you listen to the tape, he says that he saw Kevin Gaines shortly before with another officer in Hollywood, and they stopped and they talked. And he says that's how Kevin Gaines knew who I was, and he repeated it. The day of the shooting, that's how Kevin Gaines knew who I was. So he admits that Kevin Gaines, at the time of the shooting, knew that he was a detective on the police department. How did he know that? You know, that's the question that comes up, is, you know, there must have been some type of dialogue before he shot him.
Okay, so the way I understand it to be is that two cops, not in uniform, both not representing LAPD, are at an intersection at the same time arguing with each other about something that has nothing to do with policing. And Frank Liga eventually pulls out his gun because he says that Kevin Gaines pulled out his gun.
Well, that's what was said, but Detective Liga was an off-duty, he was an on-duty undercover detective at the time. So he had resources. He had the radio. He could have called for backup and called for black and white units. He didn't have to engage Kevin Gaines. If it happened the way he said, he did not have to engage him at the time. What wasn't disclosed was later he said that he called and his radio wasn't working. He called for backup, but no one heard him. Those are things that he mentioned later on in the investigation, which I don't believe. He said that Kevin Gaines said words like, I'm going to cap you. Dialogue that you hear on TV, you know, not real gang terms. And so, you know, it was fabricated. But in this, and I've always believed, and And I worked with Kevin Gaines. I know for a fact he knew who Detective Liger was. I know his tactics. I know how he would approach this situation tactically. I know that he would not pull out a gun and just point it at somebody. He's trained when you point, you pull out your gun, you're pointing it to shoot, to engage a person. And I know that if he did point a gun, there's no way Detective Liger would have been able to get off two shots without Kevin Gaines getting off one, and the gun was already pointed at him. You know, it's impossible. And the way, and Kevin Gaines was left-handed, and that's another thing. He would have had to reach around this way to do that, and I know he wouldn't do that. At this moment, we don't have proof that Liger knew who Kevin Gaines was, but we know that Kevin Gaines knew who Detective Liger was. And also, too, Detective Liger is a seasoned veteran. He knows what a gang member looks like. He knows the actions of a gang member. Kevin Gaines never looked like a gang member, always sharply dressed, well-groomed. There was nothing about him that said gang member other than he was black. That was it. And Detective Liger, experienced detective, knew that. The reason this didn't get a thorough investigation, one, was because the investigator was friends with Detective Liger, still is close friends with Detective Liger. And that's how the department works. If you have a friend, they got your back. Another thing, there wasn't a thorough investigation of the fear of what the outcome might be. I mean, there's allegations that this was a hit, that if Kevin Gaines is tied to Rampart, Detective Liger could be tied to Rampart, could be tied to Suge Knight as well. So there are speculations that it could be that Detective Liger was carrying out a hit. No one wanted to touch this story. The officer, the person that I received the tape from, I sent it out to many people, and the written complaint was out there, and they tried to go through the department, and there was no response at the same time that I received. No response. No one wanted to touch it. Nobody wanted to go in that direction at all. They just wanted to just let it go. So nobody wants to comment on it, and it's just so that it just recently hit the media. Now people feel compelled, they're being forced to make statements about it. So eventually the city council is going to have to say something.
Okay, so that's the story of Frank Liger, racist cop in the LAPD. Killed one of his own fellow officers. I mean, you know, controversy. But that's just one story. One story of many. The next story we're going to be talking about a department of the LAPD that they called Crash Rampart. And the crash means something. They'll tell you about that in the clip. You know, the words, the different letters mean something. And they're going to tell you about that. It was kind of one of those groups of officers, drug unit, where they were kind of like what we were talking about in the other stories about cop corruption. They were taking drugs from drug dealers, taking money from drug dealers, doing a lot of shady shit. And this was a department like those guys that did a whole lot of shady shit. And they knew they were doing some shady shit. So this is the story about Crash Rampart in the LAPD.
Los Angeles Police Department is embroiled in the worst scandal in its history. Charges of police evidence tampering and perjury have led to the freeing of dozens of inmates who were wrongly accused and convicted.
Prosecutors plan to ask a judge today to overturn more convictions as a result of the ongoing LAPD corruption scandal.
That now brings the total number of cases overturned to 40. Meantime, the city's dealing with a growing number of lawsuits growing out of this scandal. Several major developments today.
Escándalo de corrupción en la división Rampart provocó que nuevos casos criminales fueran anulados por una corte de Los Ángeles mientras se investiga la supuesta alteración en los mismos.
Policías a la cárcel y millones de dólares para las víctimas puede ser el final de este escándalo de corrupción policial.
Los Angeles officials say it could take years to resolve the city's police corruption scandal, its worst ever. More convictions were overturned today. The city is looking at millions of dollars in legal claims by people wrongfully accused.
Add another 9 to the list of cases thrown out because of the LAPD corruption scandal, plus a staggering estimate of how much the resulting lawsuits could cost the city.
What's a huge mess?
That description of the Rampart Police corruption scandal given today by District Attorney Gil Garcetti. 9 more criminal convictions thrown out today. That makes 40 so far, including Stephen Garcia's.
I lost my family, my home, cars, clothes, everything.
Garcia says ex-Rampart police officer Rafael Perez framed him.
He showed me some cocaine and told me that if I didn't give him some information on who was selling firearms or who was selling certain amounts of drugs and so forth, that I was going to go to prison.
And he did, for almost 3 years. Now Garcia's attorney is working on a lawsuit against the city, just one of many that could cost Los Angeles up to $125 million.
New developments in the LAPD scandal. Tonight, a federal judge has made a major decision regarding anti-gang officers and illegal immigrants.
If it's the situation like Mr. Tejeda, where they literally threaten him because he's a material witness to police misconduct, and they tear up his green card, whatever people may or may not think is right is not the point. We have mechanisms that we have to follow.
El escándalo de corrupción en la división Rampart de la Policía de Los Ángeles vivió hoy otro penoso capítulo. Un grupo de abogados presentó una demanda colectiva que involucra al Servicio de Inmigración y Naturalización.
They all have the same rights and the same constitutional protections.
Esta noche, abogados de 4 de las víctimas de los oficiales de Rampart informaron sobre la demanda presentada contra la Policía de Los Ángeles.
A federal judge has refused to bar the scandal-plagued LAPD Rampart Division from having contact with young Latino males, who may be illegal immigrants and involved in gangs.
Bueno, un juez federal de Los Ángeles toma una decisión sobre la Policía de Los Ángeles y las presuntas entregas de indocumentados al Servicio de Inmigración.
Mr. Soriano is a unique situation. He had one conviction overturned.
Para el abogado Gregory Yates, las unidades antipandilleras de Los Ángeles pueden ser más peligrosas que los mismos pandilleros.
Su mentalidad es muy parecida a quienes acusan de ser peligrosos. Y creo que en este caso la pandilla del Departamento de Policía de Los Ángeles representa un peligro mayor al público que cualquier otra pandilla, porque ellos supuestamente son los guardianes del público.
Yates representa a 35 personas que dicen ser víctimas de la unidad Crash.
Officers in the Rampart Division are now accused of rigging deportation orders for suspected gang members or witnesses to police misconduct. Channel 4's Patrick Healy is live at the Metropolitan Detention Center in downtown Los Angeles, where one suspect could be deported within just a few hours. Patrick.
Colleen, Paul, the case of Walter Rivas, a father of two who's no angel, but his lawyers say he was framed and a tainted conviction was overturned just 2 weeks ago. Yet Rivas remains in custody at the Metropolitan Detention Center. He could be deported to El Salvador as soon as tomorrow. Tonight, the tears of worry belong to the 12-year-old son of a Salvadorian immigrant who came to the streets of LAPD's Rampart Division and had run-ins with the anti-gang officers in the crash unit, now the focus of the corruption probe. A conviction has been overturned as tainted, but two others remain in effect. And brought to the attention of INS and in federal custody, Walter Rivas may be deported before the Rampart scandal is fully sorted out. His brother Julio holds out hope.
He said that maybe he's going to be one of the persons on those cases.
We have mechanisms that we have to follow, constitutional principles that we have to adhere to, and that wasn't done in multitudes of instances by crash.
The cases cited by Attorney Yates in his lawsuit touch on the corruption revealed by disgraced ex-officer Rafael Perez. In one case, Perez acknowledged setting up for deportation a man named Osvaldo Tejada Delgado so he could not testify as to having seen the then officer planting evidence.
And they tear up his green card, and to this day, he still cannot ascertain his status.
Attorney Yates is seeking a federal court order that would, in effect, require LAPD to follow its own 21-year-old policy that undocumented status in itself is not a matter for police action. This evening, a federal judge declined to issue such an order on an emergency basis. The matter comes up again next month.
Okay. So that gives you a little bit of information about the Rampart controversy. And the next clip I'm going to play, you know all about this one. This is about the Rodney King incident. And this is a long clip, but I'm going to play this in its entirety because it is one of the many controversies that have plagued the LAPD in its history. And it'll give me a chance to check the check the weather and see what the weather's like. I think we got a thunderstorm coming through. So, again, unfortunately, we may have to cut the show short because I don't want to take the chance. But we'll see how it goes. So I'm going to play the clip and then I'll check the weather and see how it goes. It seems like I'm telling. It seems like Tuesdays, and I had this issue before with Tuesdays. It was like Tuesdays. It was either raining real bad or thunderstorm or snowing or something. And I have no idea what's going on with Tuesdays. This kind of stuff should happen on Mondays because Mondays suck. But anyway, I'm going to play this clip. I'll check the weather and be right back in about 20 minutes. And then the last clip we're going to play, we're going to play a story about an ex-cop named Chris Dorner and talk about what he did. Which is, if you haven't heard that story, you need to hear that. It is crazy. Be right back.
Ended early Sunday morning with the motorist, a black male, being brutally beaten and kicked by Los Angeles police officers. A beating that continued even as the man appeared to offer no resistance.
All of a sudden, police brutality had a human face, and it was being battered by Los Angeles cops on a neighborhood street in the San Fernando Valley. The face belonged to Rodney King, a 25-year-old high school dropout with a criminal record. He'd been convicted of second-degree robbery, and he was out on parole.
The motorist was apparently shot by a taser gun, which is used to electrically shock a suspect into submission. But police also stomped on the man's head and repeatedly kicked him before both his wrists and ankles were bound.
All of it happened right over here.
Among the eyewitnesses at the scene, there was disagreement over what and who had started.
One guy in particular that just hit him and hit him and hit him and hit him and it just wouldn't stop.
The cops said they suspected King was high on drugs, that he was belligerent and resisting arrest. King said they never let up.
They continued to pound on me and beat on me all over my body. They beat where it hurt, in my ankles. They beat my whole body where it hurt. It hurt real bad because it was hit with a stick. And the same with my face, my jaw. I was scared for my life.
He was taken by rescue ambulance to nearby Pacific.
That was unlike any other police department in the country.
Chief General Gates was vociferous in defending the department, a department with a reputation for modern, high-tech weaponry and tactics.
I would hope the public would not, on the basis of this one tape, make up their minds about the Los Angeles Police Department. We don't train our officers to do this kind of thing, and lastly, we don't
have bodies through the neighborhood. But those kinds of incidents, from my perspective, were not unusual.
But this time, the case went to a grand jury. 11 days later, they handed down indictments.
Four Los Angeles policemen face felony charges tonight in the notorious videotape beating of a black motorist that stunned the nation earlier this month. 40-year-old Sergeant Stacy Kuhn, officers Ted Brazino, Larry Powell, and Tim Wind made a brief court appearance today after being named in a 5-count indictment. Kuhn, whose job was to keep his officers in line that night, faces the most charges. Seen here, holding an electric stun gun, the wires still attached to 25-year-old Rodney King, Kuhn is accused of assault, intentional great bodily harm, and later attempting a cover-up. Officers Powell, a veteran, and Wind, a rookie, also face assault charges. Veteran officer Ted Bravino, 38 years old, is seen shouting at the downed motorist and then walking over and stomping on his head.
The indictment intensified demands for Chief Gates' resignation. Gates said he wasn't leaving, but he moved to fire Wynn, the rookie, and to suspend the other three without pay. But then the legal case against the four appeared to grow even stronger.
Newly released police computer messages have stoked the political firestorm. Car-to-car exchanges that night suggesting racist attitudes. Of a domestic dispute involving African Americans that occurred before the King beating, one squad messaged, "It was right out of Gorillas in the Mist." That car was manned by officers Larry Powell and Timothy Wind, both indicted last week in the King attack. It's not clear who operated the computer, but after that incident, one of them typed, "I haven't beaten anyone this bad in a long time." And over their police radio, laughter as they called an ambulance for the hogtied and beaten motorist. This from a supervising sergeant to a command center. "You just had a big-time use of force, tased and beat the suspect of CHP pursuit, big time." The command center replied, "Oh well, I'm sure the lizard didn't deserve it. Ha ha."
It's done to control an aggressive combative suspect, and sometimes police work is brutal. That's just a fact of life.
On cross-examination, the prosecution could not shake Kuhn's story.
"And is that the Los Angeles Police Department policy, that is, to keep hitting somebody with the baton until the person complies?"
"Yes, sir."
"That's what the Los Angeles Police Department teaches?"
"That's true, sir."
"To hit somebody until he complies?"
"That's correct."
Then a bombshell. One of the four police officers turned against the other three, saying he thought they had overreacted.
"What I recall was I didn't see Mr. King moving, and I thought Officer Powell was out of control then."
Ted Brasino was the one cop who broke ranks and testified against his fellow officers.
"I didn't understand what was going on out there. I just didn't understand it. It didn't make any sense to me. I couldn't see why they were doing what they were doing."
"Well, did you think it was right or wrong or what?"
"Wrong."
"All right."
Despite Brasino's bombshell, the defense offered the mainly white, middle-class jury powerful reasons why it should ignore Brasino's testimony and acquit the four officers.
"These officers, these defendants, do not get paid to lose street fights."
"Only four officers stand trial, but their attorneys want the jury to believe much more is at stake. They argued that guilty verdicts would be a blow to police authority and invite anarchy."
"And this is not a game out there. This is real life."
"That is a job that falls to these police officers. The line between chaos and society."
But Prosecutor White fought back. "It was an embarrassment," he said, "even a tragedy that the officers were hiding behind their badges."
"I knew at one point I would hear about the thin blue line. It is embarrassing to every man and woman across this country who puts on a uniform every day and goes out and does their job, and they follow the law."
Were found not guilty on all but one count.
Reaction to the verdicts was swift.
"This is not going to end. They just started a war. They just declared a war.
What are we supposed to go back and do? My people are going to be upset, to say the least. They hurt. We've seen one injustice after another."
The jury's verdict will never outlive the images of the savage beating, seared forever into our minds and our souls.
"I am thoroughly convinced, as were the others, I believe, that Mr. King was in full control of the whole situation at all times. He was not writhing in pain. He was moving to get away from the officers. And he gave every indication that he was under PCP.
And she added she thought the prosecution made a big mistake by not putting Rodney King on the stand.
"I personally would like to have seen him, to have listened to him. But the prosecutors decided not to bring him on board, so that wasn't an equation that we could look at in making our conclusion."
"We've received a lot of criticism for not calling Mr. King at this trial. We didn't want to make Mr. King the focus of the trial. We wanted the focus to be on the defendants."
"The Rodney King verdicts came at a particular point in the history of Los Angeles that where the city was like a powder keg.
There's gonna be some hell gonna break out. It's gonna be a riot. I'm not lying. Think I'm playing? Why you think they closed down all the stores? It's gonna be some shit. It was on film. We saw him beating that man. That's bullshit. And we're not gonna stand for it.
What you're watching is the genesis of a riot. Not long after the King verdicts, police find themselves being swallowed up in a neighborhood that is seething.
Location, near the intersection of Florence Boulevard and Normandy Avenue, in the mostly black ghetto of South Central Los Angeles, where police were called to control angry protesters.
They had come to arrest some men for bothering a store owner, but it clearly wasn't going well. And soon came the order many officers would later regret. Get out of here, code 3. What they left behind was a pressure cooker on high.
Had the police stood their ground on this spot, what happened next might not have happened. The crowd, becoming angrier by the minute, surged down the sidewalk to that intersection, which for 2 hours would become LA's hell on earth.
Anyone who wasn't black was a target. Rocks hit one car that careens out of control. The driver pays the price for being Latino. In the utter chaos, he leaves a woman behind, dazed. Two squad cars race through without stopping. The police will not come back. Later, some officers say it was a disgrace they didn't. The crowd is in a bloodthirsty frenzy now. They swarm over this car, whose driver is Asian, pull him out, and beat him.
One of the people who got caught in that intersection was Reginald Denny, who was driving a cement truck.
This new video shows him being pulled from the cab, then lying in the street after his vicious beating, then clawing the air for help.
Denny was finally rescued by African Americans who saw the attack on television, but that moment was lost in the chaos of Florence and Normandy. Across town at police headquarters, where a crowd of protesters had assembled, Police Chief Darrell Gates was nowhere to be found. He was attending a fundraiser in Brentwood, the fundraiser that would keep him out of touch for several critical hours, hours in which the rioting across the city quickly got out of control.
These people are angry. They have every right to be.
The anger kept pouring out. Crowds soon began throwing rocks and bottles and setting fires. Still, the police held back. The greedy began looting, and it continued for hours, unchecked.
By nightfall, the scene at police headquarters had turned ugly.
A crowd of several hundred tried to rush the building. They taunted patrolmen who stood shoulder to shoulder in riot gear. Unable to provoke a fight, the angry mob roamed at will through downtown Los Angeles, trying to set government buildings on fire, breaking whatever they could, torching cars.
The rioting, at first concentrated in South Los Angeles, spread to other areas of the city, to the Crenshaw District, to Santa Monica, even to the fringes of Hollywood. At 9 p.m., 5 hours after the verdict, Mayor Bradley declared a local state of emergency, and he asked California Governor Pete Wilson to activate 2,000 National Guardsmen. Every cop in the city was ordered to report for duty. Fire alarms were coming in at the rate of 3 a minute.
There have been riots, looting downtown, but right now what I want to show you is they have started fires down at the end of the street. That's where the crowd has, they've kind of made a circle downtown. They went through, looted the Justice Building, City Hall, breaking buildings, and there were several police officers drawing their guns.
Outside Los Angeles, there soon would be scattered echoes of violence as well. Seattle, San Francisco, Tampa, Birmingham, Atlanta, Las Vegas, and back in Los Angeles.
This is the latest stuff that was shot by the CBS crew that have been roving, and they said that they have hit every single building in the downtown area.
31 was bleeding, is riding the king, you know what I'm saying? It's all for him, you know what I'm saying? Peace, riding the king, peace.
Whoa!
Daylight didn't stop mobs of looters from ransacking stores, and neither did police, patrolling the sidelines and mostly outnumbered.
Why are you taking this?
Why? Because it's free. You don't have to do that. You know, people working hard to make a business.
You know, if you don't want to do it, don't do it. But let the other people do it. So, come on, everybody!
As the rioting and looting continued unabated into his second day, Mayor Bradley imposed a dusk-to-dawn curfew. The L.A. police appeared helpless in the face of so much violence.
We were simply overwhelmed and not able to get to some of those incidents that we regret not getting to.
That's why word that the National Guard was on the scene brought some hope that the rioting could be controlled.
Busloads of National Guardsmen are arriving at staging areas in Los Angeles. It's expected they will be in some of the neighborhoods later tonight, and they're getting here just in time.
But it was not to be. Bureaucratic wrangling over when and where the guardsmen ought to be deployed, plus an inexplicable delay in issuing live ammunition, allowed the looting and the fires to spread throughout the city.
You know, I built this from scratch, okay? Everything that I own is in there. The black who have businesses, they're the losers. We lose all the time.
With police nowhere to be seen, many proprietors armed themselves and tried, mostly without success, to defend their stores from the looting and arson.
Someone ought to ask that cop right there who's parked to check that Cadillac. But he won't. He's going to drive by here and smile at us. Watch.
As the death toll mounted, the disruption of city services spread. Bus service was halted. Too dangerous, say officials.
Hopefully, they will go home tonight, get a good night's rest, and decide that this is nonsense and they ought to stop it.
Ammunition sales are banned, gasoline sales restricted. Schools and most public buildings are closed, along with all 90 branches of the Wells Fargo Bank. Baseball, basketball, and horse racing all canceled.
By nightfall, the epidemic of anger had set the skyline ablaze. 1,500 separate fires going at the same time, according to one fire department count.
Each time a count is made, another one pops up. Fire officials say it's simply impossible to keep up with all of them. In many instances, the fires are started after a store has been looted. Just as the looters move away, somebody throws a gasoline bomb and the flames explode.
We're running out of men and equipment. These guys are local guys. They live here, and they're helping us with the fire.
The crisis brought out the best in some, the worst in others. Watch as these people silently, methodically loot a grocery store as if nothing is wrong, oblivious to the camera, unafraid of the police.
Even as the rioting continued, recriminations began about the police department's abrupt withdrawal from Florence and Normandy in the first hours of the violence.
If Bill Gates and his top officers had provided adequate police protection for that area, it would not have spread, would not have caused the damage throughout the city. And this is the man who, Bill Gates, who said he had a plan. What was his plan? Was his plan to pull out of that area, to not afford proper police protection? We think he would only do that in that area because it's a racist policy.
In fact, the L.A. riot looked like a black and white race war. What was scarcely noticed in media accounts at the time was the role of Hispanics, who were both protagonists and victims of the mayhem.
South Central is Latino. That's why we're 44% of the city's population. And people didn't understand that. They thought it was African American. And so where you had the areas of the civil unrest, by far the majority of the people were Latino. And the media, again, was failing in picking that up.
So what had started as a riot involving mostly blacks turned into a riot that involved mostly Hispanics in terms of arrests. But even as the ethnic character of the riot changed, the death toll continued to rise.
In 3 days of violence this week, at least 37 people have been killed, more than 1,300 injured. There have been more than 3,000 arrests. Property damage, over $200 million.
As the violence continued, there was a moment of high drama.
Just a few short minutes ago, the man whose name came to symbolize this crisis made his first public appearance in 14 months. A shaken Rodney King appealed for an end to the violence.
People, I just want to say, you know,
Can we all get along? Can we get along? Can we stop making it horrible for the older people and the kids? And I mean, we've got enough smog here in Los Angeles, let alone to deal with setting these fires and things. It's just not right. It's not right. And it's not gonna change anything. We'll get our justice. They've won the battle, but they haven't won the war.
That very night, President Bush ordered 5,000 federal troops into Los Angeles to help control the violence. In a nationally televised address, he appealed for calm, and he announced that the four officers might face federal civil rights charges.
What you saw and what I saw in the TV video was revolting. I felt anger. I felt pain. I thought, how can I explain this to my grandchildren?
Whether it was the arrival of federal troops or Rodney King's dramatic plea, as the weekend arrived, it was clear that the massive military and police presence had finally brought Los Angeles under control. By Sunday, May 3rd, only a few scattered incidents were reported and no new major fires.
The smoke is no longer billowing out over the city. Downtown Los Angeles last night resembled an armed camp, police presence, military presence on every corner, guarding stores that were looted.
Hear the sound of the army of the Lord.
There was a very hopeful sign in South Central yesterday. Hundreds upon hundreds of people from all over the city, black, white, Latino, all races, came together with shovels and brooms and mops, trying to literally use household weapons to clean up the streets after a riot. It was a very moving scene.
But for many, there was nothing worth cleaning up. With devastating suddenness, the riot had wiped out their hopes and years of hard work.
Richard Park returned to the scene of the battle today. With guns drawn, he and an employee had tried to hold off perhaps 300 looters.
You shot in the air.
Yeah, I shot in the air.
The looters fired back. Park's sister and sister-in-law were both wounded.
Were you afraid for your life?
Yeah, first time I afraid for my life.
After the family fled, the store was stripped and wrecked.
They tried to kill me. Why do they want to kill me? I don't do anything bad to them.
It's a story repeated over and over by Korean business people in Los Angeles.
This is America. We have to stand our pride. Human dignity. Where is your human dignity?
As Los Angeles began...
Case of police abuse.
The defendants are charged with stomping, kicking and beating Mr. King. Therefore, it was an unreasonable use of force.
That was the charge against officers Lawrence Powell, Timothy Wind, and Theodore Brasino. Their sergeant, Stacy Kuhn, who never struck King, was indicted separately for not trying to stop the beating.
The second indictments caused some uneasiness among attorneys, even among attorneys who specialized in police brutality cases.
Indicting anybody for the same crime twice is an abomination. It's unfair. It's a perversion of the double jeopardy laws, and it never should be done in a democracy.
But in the city's black community, where people have felt victimized by police, there was a feeling of vindication.
I'm glad to see that it happened. Basically, those four officers just got away with, they got away with almost murder.
If those officers that beat up Rodney King, at least one of them doesn't get convicted, they'll be all right. They'll be one.
But 2 years later, Los Angeles had changed. Police Chief Gerald Gates had resigned in the spring of 1993, replaced by Willie Williams, an African-American from Philadelphia. Nonetheless, the city was tense as the second trial got underway.
While protesters chanted outside a federal courthouse in Los Angeles today, inside, jury selection began. And defense attorneys...
Officer Theodore Brasino and rookie policeman Timothy Wind, who appeared to play relatively minor roles in the beating, were found not guilty.
Okay, so that was a clip about the infamous Rodney King incident in L.A. back in the day. We've got a couple of phone calls that I'm going to grab right quick. We've got one last clip to play, and it's a short clip. We'll play that. We'll probably talk for a few minutes, and then I'll keep looking out the window to see if when this thunderstorm is rolling around. Like I said, it seems like we're always getting thunderstorms on Tuesdays, and I have no idea why. So let's hit the first button. Hello, is this Sister Pam, I believe? Hello, how you doing?
Hi, brother. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay, wonderful. How are you tonight?
I'm doing okay.
Good, I was just listening. I had told and listening to your show, and I hear that, you know, the Rodney King, and I never forget that day or night. And I mean, it was like chaos. You know, I'm like, whoa. You know, fighting and beating Rodney King and fathers and children. And, you know, aftermath, of course, the community went wild. And, you know, I mean, they had a reason to, but the thing is, unfortunately, our people, you know, things tear up our own neighborhood. They'll tear up your own neighborhood, you know. You got to do some distress goes elsewhere where it's needed. But nevertheless, that just means that, yes, we still have police corruption. But the thing is that we're going to have to take care of our own community. And I say that every week or every time I get on air, but it's the truth. We just had a disaster preparedness in our neck of woods to prepare our people. So God has to be and police their own community. That's what we're going to have to do, brother. And it was beautiful. We had a great turnout out. We had to, you know, for not just only disasters of the nature, you know, like floods, fire, hurricanes, et cetera. But to learn to look, to watch, and see if our own people are doing things that they shouldn't be doing, which of course we are, and to go and try to invite those brothers, and there's going to come a time and place where we're going to have to take care of business within our own people. Therefore, we're going to need the outer enemies to come in our neighborhood because we'll be taking care of our neighborhood ourselves. And until we do that, we're going to hear more of the corruption from the policemen because those are really, they're not there to help them. Most of them aren't there. And so we have to police our own neighborhood where it's called 10,000 Spirits. You don't have to be part of the nation without part of the nation. Not officially a member of the Nation of Islam, but it's for all our people, whether you're Christian, non-Christian, in an organization, no organization, doesn't matter your status. It's the only thing that matters is you want to see peace and you want to help your people become more safe and protect the women in your neighborhood. So you can go there on justiceorelse.com, and it's called 10,000 Cities. We're looking for all over the United States and beyond of our people. Sign it up to learn how to police their own neighborhood. And with that, I'm going to digress and let Elvis talk. Thank you so much.
Yep, I thank you for that. And I will say this too, that, you know, I don't want people to think that I'm picking on the cops, and I'm not. I'm not picking on police officers because they do have a very important job to do, you know, and I understand that. I'm talking about police officers because, you know, their job is to protect and serve everybody, not just a few people here and there.
Exactly.
And, you know, they can't do the job if they're corrupted, you know. They want to get rid of the drug dealers. Yeah, if they want to get rid of the drug dealers, then get rid of the drug dealers, but don't be a drug dealer on the side, you know.
Right. And
don't.
You're right.
Yeah, I was going to say, no problem. I was going to say, you know, don't bust the drug dealers and then steal the money and then, you know, don't do
right.
a lot of crooked stuff like that.
Right. And
you know,
because. You're absolutely right. I'm not speaking of all police. That's we definitely need the policing. not going to lie, in our neighborhood, let's keep it real, because some of us are cray-cray. I'm going to keep it real. Those that I do what they're supposed to do, having a business involved, not just going out killing our people, you know, like a gang or anything. I'm not talking about those. You know, I always say, no matter, and if this means no matter what color or whatever, if you're doing good and doing what you're supposed to do, and being crazy, which your God is wonderful. And yes, we do need police because some of us are outraged. We're not talking about those. The ones that have their business, sounds up to them. But the ones that not, those ones that you say need to be out of there. But also, we have to do better in our community. We have to do better with our people. We have to do better as far as the men concerned to protect the women. The women have to do better by going out of, you know, doing everything that's outrageous and putting yourself in harm. So we all have a part to play. I'm just not pointing the finger at no one. I'm turning the finger back to me, so therefore I can do my part. With that, thank you so much. I rest my mind.
Yep. Yep, no problem at all. No problem at all. I'm going to hit the, let me hit this button right here. Okay. All right. Hello, caller.
What's going on, Anthony?
Hey, what's up?
Oh, everything's cool. Temperature's nice. But you know, Anthony, what year was it that that happened? Other than the 80s, George Bush Sr.
80, yeah. I should have wrote the year down, but yeah, it was in the 80s.
Late 80s, of course, now the time when people can reflect. But I want to tell you something, what I think of all those rioters. I think they've done the right thing. It may not have been the legal thing, but it was the right thing at that time. Because you had racketeering going on in that police department. I'm sorry for the people that lost their life and people that lost their property. You know, insurance don't cover it in war and riots. But it was something that had been festering for a long time, and the reaction that they showed was well needed at that time. But those police departments, like L.A., Chicago, New York, and, you know, Baltimore, like you reported on, I think it was last week, I'm not sure. Those apartments had rackets occurring within them. And they was as much criminal as the criminals themselves. In many cases, the criminals was being fostered by them. And people complained to no avail. Then things just finally build up. And it ignites the animosity and the treatment that they receive from Asians when you go in their stores. And, you know, people get sick and tired of this stuff. So when I reflect back on that, my opinion is that they've done the right thing. It may not have been the legal thing, but it was the right thing. And hopefully much has been learned from that. There's still pockets. And you know those big departments like L.A. and Chicago and New York, those are some hard nuts to crack. Very difficult for people to control that. You know, Chicago's got 50 alder persons. 50. And the type of governance that goes on there is very difficult for people unless they all tune in to some same degree to be able to control an institution like the Chicago Police Department. New York Police Department has over 35,000 members. That's a damn small city. And it's a hell of a voting block. And they do influence politics in one way or the other. So when I reflect back on that, I'm sorry for people that had to lose their life. But the people that demonstrated the way they did, I think they've done the right thing. So I'll let you get back to your show.
Okay. Yeah, I will say next week I'm going to do a show on the last part of the show is going to be the last part of the series is going to be on NYPD. So that's going to be for next week. And I will say, and I meant to say this earlier, but I think that the type of music that we had, well, people called gangster rap, came from L.A. And the police corruption and all this kind of stuff. And there was a mention in one of the clips about Suge Knight and his involvement and his crookedness or whatever it is. And matter of fact, I think I'm going to do a show on Death Row Records, probably, if not in August, probably in September or something like that, because that's interesting too. But, yeah, unfortunately, the police, like I said earlier, the people in the police department, they're humans like everybody else. They can be easily corrupted like everybody else. And these are people that are getting paid to serve and protect, but the only people they seem to be serving are themselves with money, drugs, extortion, I mean, the whole nine. And the reason why I talk about these things is because we need to know about them because, you know, if we don't bring this kind of thing to the light and talk about this stuff, they're going to keep on getting away with whatever they're getting away with. And, you know, who's going to stop them? If they don't stop themselves, I mean, what's going to happen? I mean, is it going to take, you know, somebody, a member of our family being killed by the cops because, you know, these crooked cops? And I do wish that the good cops in these departments would speak out against the other cops. But I understand, you know, there's a brotherhood, there's a line you don't cross and all that kind of stuff. I understand all that. But if you've got these crooked cops in your department doing these things and you're not doing anything or saying anything about it, you know, that's pretty messed up.
Them good cops need to be backed up by the people. The people should put out there that we need people to come forward and we will protect you. Because you are our employee. Yeah, those cops that's in that working alongside and they see that stuff going on, but they're scared because they themselves can become the target of the type of objective attacks. But it takes people in the community to stand behind them, organizing in order for that to happen. But no, that was, you know, like I said before, I hate to see it happen, but it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. I think what NWA said it best. I mean, it's one of those things that just kept building up and building up, and then it just got to the point where the fuse was lit, and, you know, there was no turning back from it. You know, they had these cops on videotape beating this man damn near to death, and, you know, nothing happened. So, you know, I remember when it was all going down. I mean, it was just looking at the news and seeing that kind of stuff. Well, I was like, damn, what in the world? I had never seen anything like that before. And seeing that live every night on TV for those couple of days was just wild. It was just crazy. I had never seen anything like it before. This next clip and final clip, this is about, I don't know if you may have heard, let me hit the button. I think this is Brother Miko on the line. Let me hit this button right here. Hey, what's up, Brother Miko?
What's happening, black man?
What's up?
Not much, man. Checking you out. What you got going today? Messing with my president.
Cool. You know what? I haven't made a mention of him all night. Tonight we're talking about. No. That's too late now. Too late. You got to stay. Tonight we're talking about corruption in the LAPD. The history of corruption and all that kind of mess they were into. I mean, they were into a whole lot of stuff. But this final clip I'm going to play. I don't know if you may remember this guy. I forgot all about this guy when I was researching this. There was this black guy named Chris Dorner. He was an ex-cop.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on a rampage, and he started killing other cops. I forgot to write the year down. But anyway, this is the last clip.
Up in the woods or something, didn't they?
Right. Right, yeah, yeah. They surrounded him.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, in the cabin. Yeah.
But
yeah,
Anthony, hang on for a second. Earlier we were playing the clips of the Rodney King incident. And I told Anthony, although I thought that what the people done in their rioting was good, that they did it,
mm-hmm.
although it might have been illegal. I know you and I was seen that at that time. We probably didn't pay much attention to it, but as we look back on it today, it was a good thing that they done. Of course, we don't want people to get killed, but the racketeering that was going on in the police department, we seen, I don't know if you had racketeering in the Detroit police department, but that kind of stuff has, you can't let that stuff continue. You have that, it's just one thing just spurs off the other.
Yeah, you got to hold those guys accountable. And there's something we did. Most of the guys that we hired, well, we knew where they stayed. So we didn't play
mm-hmm.
that. We knew where they stayed. We knew their wives. We knew their kids. You know, that kind of holds a man in line when he can be touched.
Mm.
Yeah. That's all we'll say to that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, we're paying these people salaries, and they're out there doing this shady shit on the side.
You know what else we made them do?
What's that?
We made them as part of their community development work. This was outside of their contract. We made them walk the streets.
Mm-hmm.
We made them go to community meetings. We made
mm-hmm.
them go work in after school programs. We made them do
mm-hmm.
all that shit, man.
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't want to do it, we went to the next one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably the thing to do, because now you hardly ever see any cops walking a beat. They're all in cars, and usually if they're a white cop in a black neighborhood, they're just zipping through. They don't, you know, a lot of them probably too scared to get out and talk to the people or, you know, find out what's going on. They're just there. They just, you know, ride through. They pull their whatever shift they pull, 8 hours, 12 hours, whatever it is. They just do their thing, and then they go back home.
We made them,
you know.
We made them knock on doors, man, and list the people that they talk to and what time they talk to them.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know what? That might not be a bad idea. That might not be a bad idea at all.
I didn't want that small down in. Piagin wasn't that smart down in St. Louis, but I know. Man, go ahead with your clip, man.
Oh, man, that's cold.
And what you talking about? We were shearing sheep back in them days.
But this is the last clip. This is talking about Chris Dorner, what made this guy snap. And like I said earlier, he was an ex-cop, and he started killing his own, you know, his own brothers. And yeah, they did. They surrounded him in a cabin in the wood and in the mountains, and they used some kind of
incinerator
explosive
device.
But incinerator, that's what it was. Yeah, and set the cabin on fire, and then come to find out,
I think
he
got away.
He might have died of a. Nah, they found his body. A couple of days later, and he had a gunshot wound to the head, so they think he might have committed suicide.
Mm.
So, but I forgot all about this. So when I found
it reminded me of Rambo.
On this, because, well, that's what it sounded like. I mean, this guy, I think at one point he had some people hostage. He was stealing cars, and you know, police chases. I mean, the whole nine. This guy did it, and he put up a manifesto that was it was a hot mess. So this guy definitely had issues. So I'm going to play this, and then we'll be right back and then I'm gonna check out this thunderstorm and see what this thunderstorm is doing, because it's like every Tuesday we're getting crummy weather, but we're gonna see what happens. So let's play this and I'll be right back.
A manhunt is underway in Southern California, and the Los Angeles Police Department is under siege. 10,000 law enforcement officers are conducting door-to-door searches for one of their own, a fugitive ex-cop. 33-year-old Christopher Jordan Dorner is suspected of killing three people in a terrifying rampage after making claims in a bizarre online manifesto that he was unjustly fired by the LAPD and needs to clear his name. In a police department with a storied and troubled history, they have never seen anything like this before. Here's ABC's David Wright with the latest.
Control units, feed info, reference 1199 for LAPD.
Over the past 24 hours, a deadly manhunt across this whole region.
Suspect vehicle still outstanding. It's a black Nissan Titan.
Police officers hunting one of their own, a rogue former officer now accused of hunting them.
Of course he knows what he's doing, and we trained him. He was also a member of the armed forces. It is extremely worrisome and scary. Especially to the police officers involved.
It all started Sunday with a grisly double homicide. 28-year-old Monica Kwan and her fiancé, Keith Lawrence, shot at close range as they sat in their car. A murder with no apparent motive. The couple had no known enemies. Kwan was a popular college basketball coach.
She was our team leader on the team. She was always there to help pick somebody else up. And unselfish.
Only last night did Irvine police say they put two and two together.
Today, we have identified Christopher Jordan Dorner as a suspect in this double homicide.
33-year-old Christopher Dorner, a lieutenant in the U.S. Navy Reserves, honorably discharged just last Friday, fired 4 years ago by the LAPD. Police claim he bore a grudge against a retired L.A. police captain, Randy Kwan, Monica's father, as well as other LAPD officers.
A particular interest at this point in the investigation is a multi-page manifesto in which the suspect has implicated himself in the slayings.
In a rambling manifesto posted online, Dorner blames Kwan and other LAPD officers of a smear campaign after Dorner reported witnessing a fellow officer commit police brutality. The manifesto vows vengeance. I will bring unconventional and asymmetrical warfare to those in LAPD uniform, whether on or off duty.
If you read his manifesto, this is a very, LAPD is a specific target, but all law enforcement is targeted.
It appears to be no idle threat. Today, the story played out with all the intensity of a Hollywood action thriller. LA Confidential meets Cape Fear.
Talk to me, I'm staying in here!
Except that this drama was real and deadly. At 10 o'clock last night, police say a man fitting Dorner's description tried to steal a boat in San Diego.
He pointed a handgun at the victim, who's an 81-year-old male, and demanded the boat.
He was unsuccessful. Later, Dorner's LAPD badge was found nearby. 1:25 a.m., Corona, an hour east of L.A. Police officers acting on a tip exchanged gunfire with a man they believed to be Dorner. The officer was grazed by the bullet, unable to pursue. 1:45, Riverside. Two more officers on a protective detail ambushed. One killed, the other seriously injured. By sunrise, jittery L.A. police officers opened fire on this blue truck in Torrance, similar to the suspect's vehicle. But the people inside were just innocent bystanders.
Tragically, we believe that this was a case of mistaken identity by the officers.
It's right off our kind of 11 o'clock.
Late this afternoon, police set up a command post in the mountains northeast of L.A., where a truck had been set ablaze. That truck turned out to be Dorner's, but the suspect was nowhere to be found.
The aerial, ground, and search with canines is continuing, and until we find some other information, we'll continue our search.
Tonight, CNN's Anderson Cooper revealed Dorner had sent him a package.
Inside the package was a hand-labeled DVD with a yellow post-it note reading in part, quote, "I never lied," apparently in reference to his dismissal from the LAPD in 2008.
There are indications he may have reason to be angry. I'm not an aspiring rapper. I'm not a gang member. I'm not a dope dealer, Dorner writes in his manifesto. I am a man who has lost complete faith in the system when the system betrayed, slandered, and libeled me. The manic account of his firing given in that manifesto is told more soberly in court documents filed in connection with a wrongful termination suit. In both, Dorner claims the LAPD fired him after he reported having witnessed his superior using a taser on a mentally ill suspect. Then he said seeing the superior handcuff the suspect and kick him in the chest and face. The suspect, Christopher Gettler, and his father offered testimony corroborating Dorner's account at the time, but the father now says he wasn't surprised that the review board ended up rejecting Dorner's claims.
I even told him, I go, what is wrong with you? You know, you don't testify against your fellow officers, the Three Musketeers. You know, what were you thinking?
The official grounds for Dorner's firing, providing false testimony in an investigation. The police chief at the time was Bill Bratton.
I really have no recollection of his particular case. He would have been fired by me, and in that I was chief of police at that time and would have had to approve his discharge.
Of course, even if Dorner were wrongly dismissed, that's no justification for murder or targeting his enemies' families.
He is narcissistic. He is grandiose.
Among the more chilling statements in the manifesto, when the truth comes out, the killing stops. But today, LA police rejected any suggestion they review his allegations.
It is not going to happen.
Dorner's manifesto indicates he is prepared to die. If they do manage to find him, don't be surprised if the LAPD obliges. I'm David Wright for Nightline in Los Angeles.
Okay, and as we said, as I said a few minutes ago, February 12th, and I forgot to write the year down, February 12th, after a shootout, they had him in a cabin. The cabin caught on fire. They found the body a couple of days later, and he had a gunshot wound to the head. That's according to the autopsy. So that's how that ended. And I'm sure there are dozens and dozens more stories from the LAPD. But those are just a few.
I wonder what happened
controversy
to
that was in LA. Uh-huh.
I wonder what happened to those two women that was in that blue pickup truck. You know, it seemed to me you could have seen that those two women
were
it
women.
Was broad daylight. Yeah, the
and
pickup
not
trucks that they shot up. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm guessing they just saw
I
the truck and just assumed that it was him and just started shooting. You know,
absolutely.
They
that
didn't
was,
even, you know,
that was reckless.
Yeah.
That was totally reckless. Whoever was involved in that shooting should have been reprimanded for that. No matter what the circumstance, you're still supposed to demonstrate a level of discipline.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's part of the problem now is that a lot of these cops, you know, they shoot first and then ask questions later, you know. And I'm not picking on them or anything, but I'm just saying that in that case, I mean, you're looking for a black male. And there were two white women in that truck. You know, two white women are totally different from a black male. So,
yeah.
you know, that just sounds
very, very,
kinda,
I remember
you know,
that very clearly.
That sounds kind of funky. Yeah.
But some
yeah.
of these individuals that's on these police departments don't have no business being on there anyway. And
right.
I'm all for anybody in that capacity that go out and agree the rights, civil rights of a citizen, that they should be tagged just like a felon or a child abuser or a pedophile. So as wherever yeah. the heck they go, that department or that potential employer has the ability to pull up their background and
yep.
thus refuse to get involved in. I also think
yeah.
that they should, people in their capacity, should carry their own damn liability insurance. Rather than that liability falling on the citizens of that community who ultimately will be faced with these settlements, breaking them,
yeah.
taking money from otherwise well-needed areas. So, anyway, man, I'm gonna get off here. I don't want no storms coming through my phone that's targeted to you.
Oh, well. Well, you know, yeah, I'm about this anyway. So, I'll say this. Like I said, I think that a lot of these cops that don't need to be on the police forces, that's got mental issues and bully issues and racist issues,
and belong to them,
don't need to
and
be
they
cops.
Belong to them gangs. You know,
right,
you have some
right.
of these cops belong to what would you call that? When you got a gang within an organization like that,
yeah.
And that's exactly what
yeah.
they have. You used to see them in the during Vietnam War. You had more Confederate flags being flown in some of those battle sites than you did the American flag back during the Vietnam War.
That's crazy. Okay, so I'm going to end tonight's program on that since we've got a storm out there somewhere. But, yeah, this is part three. Next week we're going to do the last part of this series, and it's going to be on the NYPD. So I'm going to go through some stories, find some clips, and we're going to talk about the NYPD. And then that'll be the last story of these corrupt cops. And hopefully these stories – you know, make us aware of you know, and like I said, I'm not picking on the cops. I'm not saying they're all bad or anything like that. But what I'm saying is that they need to be called out. We need to talk about them because we don't need these cops out here in the street killing people for no reason. You know, if they're going to do the job, they need to do the job. If the cops are too much of pussies to be cops, then they don't need to be cops. They need to go find something else to do. Don't need bullies with badges. You don't need people out there shooting people for no reason because they got a gun and they got a badge. So if they're not going to do the job, then they need to go find something else to do. That's all we're saying. So on that note, I'm going to close it out. Be back next week. And like I said, we're going to talk about NYPD and all of the stuff that they've been through. We'll take your calls and comments on that one also. So, all right. So I'm going to say good night and see you next week. And also, before I go, thanks for the callers, as usual. Thank you for calling in. If you didn't call in and was just listening, thank you for listening. And we'll be back next week. See you next week.